Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the...
What are we at?
April 3rd meeting of April 4th. Okay, I'm supposed to use the script. If I do what the staff tells me, it works better for everybody. Welcome to the April 4th meeting of the Education Finance Division. Representative Hewitt, I believe I saw you reviewing the April 2nd meeting minutes.
I have, Chair, and so moved.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Hewitt motion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. I'd now like to move House File 2400 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. In your packets, members, is a amendment coded HF 2400 DE1. Is there any discussion to the amendment before we adopt it to establish the base for our work for the rest of the day? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the DE1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Before we move into the amendments that have been offered, Mr. Strom has completed district runs, and there are other finance spreadsheets in your packet. But, Mr. Strom, would you be able to walk us through the district runs, please?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, I would be glad to do that. The one on top of the folder, oriented on the legal paper landscape, that starts FY 2021 House K-12 Division Report. This printout summarizes all of the modeled effects of the proposed amendment, House File 2400 DE1, with the exception that the paraprofessional aid, we're still working on the data to go into that. So you may see a revised version of this in the next day or two with an additional amount on for the paraprofessional aid. The printout is organized in ascending district order. The name and number of the district show up in the first two columns. And then there's a light gray line halfway through the page. The way the page is organized is the base revenue for general education, special education, and the other programs that are changing, career and technical revenue, Safe Schools revenue, and ECFE revenue, and the VPK are all included in that number. So if you look at the state total, the base amount is $11,456 per pupil. The House proposals all taken together change that to $11,770. Then the next three columns show where those changes occur. Again, following across on the totals line, you can see that's a $249 per pupil increase over base in general education, a $50 increase over base in special education, and the other categories I mentioned, a $15 increase over base, totaling on the statewide level $314 per pupil over base for fiscal year 20 and 21. When those amounts are all added together and then divided by the base for that, on average, that's a 2.7% increase. After the light gray line down the page, the same columns are repeated for fiscal year 21. And as we've talked about in this committee before, we always measure over base, which is essentially flat for 21. So this increase that shows up in this column is over base, but school districts and others generally measure from the previous year. So essentially that $314 of FY20 is included in that amount when the FY21 is started on top of that, or is placed on top of that. So in the FY21, in those last four columns, or last five columns, the general education over base, the $409 includes the 3% from the year before and the 2% for that year. the restoration of VPK and the additional money for English learners. The special education revenue includes the information we talked about earlier. You can see that's $94 on average. Then the other categories total $46 per pupil, totaling $548 over base. But again, remember that over base is different than over the previous year. So all told then, in FY21, the house change over base is 4.7%. Those amounts then are shown by the different clusters of districts, Minneapolis, St. Paul, inner and outer ring suburbs, and then greater Minnesota districts grouped by size, and then then a separate line for the charter schools. Mr. Chair, in addition to this printout, summarizes at a very high level the things that are going on underneath are then listed separately, and if members would like to turn to the second and third printouts. Those are the special education changes that we discussed earlier. And if members would go to the second one, which is labeled Special Education Funding Fiscal Year 2021, these printouts for 20 and for fiscal 21 are organized in exactly the same way. The very first column shows the House total estimated special education revenue. The second column, called Feb forecast, is the base amount for that year. Then the change shows up, and the change per pupil per average daily membership shows up there. But I think for members, the important columns here are those in the middle. The proposed change per ADM shows which of those categories that districts are benefiting from or being disadvantaged of because of the new formula. And so if you look across the list there at the state average, again, you can see the regular aid is up $11 per pupil. The excess cost aid is down $8 per pupil. The cross-subsidy reduction is an additional $86 per pupil. The elimination of the growth cap, $10 per pupil. The reduction in the hold harmless is a negative $15 per pupil. The tuition nets out but affects districts very differently, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And then the charter school adjustment that's part of the governor's plan as well is listed for a total change in special education revenue. And you can see then the $96 here per ADM is essentially the same as the $94 on the overall printout, but because there's some a fair amount of special education money that goes to cooperatives, that's why there's a slight difference between that $96 and the $94 on the previous printout. But then these again are grouped by size of district and location, and you can look down the list there and see how those have changed. The FY21 and FY20 printouts are exactly the same format for members to use. And then very quickly, a couple of other quick printouts. There are three other individual printouts for you. The first of those is the career and technical revenue change in the bill. This is ordinary paper size turned landscape, says estimated fiscal year 21 career and technical revenue. This shows the effect of increasing the revenue from 35 to 50% of the total with the higher equalizing factor. And you can see in the third to last column the increase in revenue per pupil unit because of this change. And then the last two columns show what happens to the average taxes paid on a $200,000 home because of the changes in this part of the bill. Then the next printout. There's also, we'll post these on the website. There's a printout for the operating referendum, and there's also a printout for Safe Schools. And so we'll have both of those available to members as well. Oh, I'm sorry. The Safe Schools one is there. Thank you, Ms. Adrians. The headers all look the same to me. The Safe Schools is also on the 14-inch paper, and starts Safe Schools revenue. Again, use the shaded line in the middle, and you can see the effect of the change in the first year. New house revenue per pupil shows on average a $12 increase in the first year, and then third to last column, a $26 increase the second year. And you can see the relative change on a $200,000 home on dollars of tax paid by that home for this program due to the higher level of equalization. So, Mr. Chair, very quickly, those are the printouts that are in members' packets, and Ms. Adrians and I are happy to speak at length with members about the printouts and go through them in detail, and we're happy to pass along the information in spreadsheets if people prefer to do the sorting themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Members, I'm sure you're all fully familiar with the printouts now. Any questions for Mr. Strom? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Strom. Thank you, members. So, for starters, there is an author's amendment, and it is the A30. A number of provisions, and if I could just walk through it with members. Line 1.3 is the non-exclusionary disciplinary practices. There's simply an erroneous cross-reference there that's being corrected. Lines 1.4 to 1.7, the certificate incentive revenue requires MDE to issue just one report when the canceled money that is reappropriated is fully spent at the end of the next biennium. Line 1.8, relating to teachers of color, eliminates a cross-reference to a proposed program that may be included in the higher education bill, but is not in the K-12 bill, so we won't reference it until it exists. Line 1.9 relates to Pelsby and adds a what's referred to as a sorely needed comma. Staying with Pelsby on lines 1.11 to 1.16 puts the preferred background language in place. Lines 1.7 to 2.11 relate to the Ag Educator Grants. We funded the program but forgot the program language in the bill, so we thought we should fix that. Yeah. Line flipping the page now to 2.12 changes a grant reference from Pelsby to the commissioner who is administering the program. On lines 213 all the way to 4.29, those are special education changes, and ensures the special education does what we in fact intended it to do. Moving to 4.30 and 4.31, this relates to Safe Schools equalizing factor, and it adds the right proposed equalizing factor and appropriation for the Safe Schools revenue. Line 5.1 relates to the Minnetonka fund transfer. We had to get the right number in for that to their request. Lines 5.2 to 5.4 relates to the early learning scholarships and adjusts the appropriation to match the initial target. Lines 5.5 to 5.15 relates to the GED testing reimbursement and amends the statutory language for the program that funds a portion of the GED or other high school equivalency tests to match the higher appropriation in the bill, and the rider language requiring one free battery of test for each test taker. That is the author's amendment. Any discussion to the motion to adopt the A30? Seeing, oh, Representative Erickson, is it about the comma?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I appreciate the comma. My question is about line 1.13 through 1.16 under the background check Pelsby must obtain. Will you give your reason for this change, please?
Yes, Representative Erickson. If I understand the language correctly, on initial licensure, teachers must provide fingerprints. This changes it so on subsequent relicensure, they don't need to again submit fingerprints because the first time should have done it.
And, Mr. Chair, you think this language accomplishes that?
That has been how it has been represented to me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will continue to think on that.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any other discussion to the A30 author's amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. There is now an author's amendment. I'm sorry, this is a technical change that arrived too late last night. On page 242, line 11, we need to adjust the number there to align with the tracking sheet. So The chair moves that we delete $387,000 and insert $347,000. Ms. Adrians, do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chair and members, what this does is it reflects that the increase in revenue that BOSA receives in the bill matches the appropriation.
Have the bill in front of me. Are there questions? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just for clarification, so this is an oral amendment.
That's correct.
And then does this change any of the runs? Is this just a typo, or, I mean, I don't even want to say typo. Was it? It's an oral amendment. What are we correcting?
I think we're correcting a typo, but hold on. Okay. Ms. Adrian.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kreisha, this change reflects what has been in the tracking sheet all along. So nothing will change in the tracking. It just ensures that the language matches the tracking.
Very good. Representative Juergens?
Just clarification. Could you repeat the change? It's at page 242, what line and what
line? Line 11, delete $387,000 and insert $347,000. Representative Kreisha.
Okay. Representative.
Representative Juergens, you're good?
I'm done.
All right.
And just Kreisha. I believe, if we do not correct this, we will put the bill as written structurally out of balance. The spreadsheets are correct. So with that, I would support the author's oral amendment.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Any further discussion to the author's oral amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, members. Let me get my packet in order. We'll next move to the A32 amendment. Representative Katiza Watun, will you please tell us about the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In lines 1.3 to 1.8, the language allows Pathway 2 scholarship providers, mainly school districts, to continue to serve four-year-old children. In the Early Childhood Committee, we lowered the age to 0 to 3 for early learning scholarships, but this portion of the amendment allows Pathway 2 programs to serve four-year-olds. In lines 1.9 to 2.4, the language cancels the amount of the early learning scholarship appropriation for funding year 19 that is currently scheduled to cancel back to the general fund, and then it is added to the 2020 and 2021 early learning scholarship appropriations. In lines 2.5 to 2.11, the language reworks the language on the grant to Metro Deaf charter schools to give comfort to Metro Deaf that the existing early ed services are billed back to resident school districts that are affected. And then in lines 2.12 to 2.13, this language clarifies that the St. Paul pilot program for savings accounts creates an account for each child born to a resident of St. Paul, not in the city of St. Paul.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watun. Each section of this amendment could be adopted as a separate amendment, which is what we'll do next.
Very good.
Would a member like to make a motion to adopt lines 1.3 to 1.8 as a separate amendment? Representative Kreisha.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, do we need a motion to actually divide the amendment? I think you've stated that, but do we actually need the motion, or?
Representative Kreisha, my understanding is we do not.
Okay, so we're going to divide the amendment, or are we just going to take each section?
Representative Kreisha, we can just take each section, which is simpler for all of us.
And we're actually voting on each one.
That's correct.
Okay, very good. So I'll move the first section if you'd like.
All right. Representative Kreisha moves lines 1.3 to 1.8 as a separate amendment. Is there any discussion to that motion? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is actually one of the sections that, as we looked at, that we do not agree with, because at this point it seems like we're, and I know we've had this debate going back and forth with both sides of delivery versus child, and this is the Pathway 1, the Pathway 2 discussion. This language, as I understand it, puts priorities on the Pathway 2 and therefore more on the heads, the institutional, and it still leaves a donut hole by removing the four-year-olds on the Pathway 1, which we have argued, and many of people have argued, that the real strength of the Opportunity Scholarship Program is giving to the families directly so that they have choice and they're able to move them in high qualities. not that the pathway twos aren't of quality, it does eliminate for the four-year-olds in the pathway one that exact choice and opportunity that we fought so hard for. So at this point, if I believe as written, that's what this does, and I would oppose that.
Representative Krisha, you referenced the Opportunity Scholarships Program. I think this is the Early Learning Scholarships Program.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that correct? I might have misspoke. Yeah, yes. Thank you for the correction, Mr. Chair. You're right.
Reduce confusion. Any discussion to the Krisha motion? Seeing none. All those in favor of the Krisha motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No. Nope. We're adopting it.
All those in favor of the Krisha motion on lines 1.3 to 1.8,
correct,
please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Correct. I know it's backwards, but I'll be opposing my own motion, Mr. Chair.
All those, including Representative Krisha, opposed, signify by saying no.
Aye.
No.
No.
The motion is adopted. All right. Moving on. Representative Katiza Watun, would you like to move lines 1.9 to 2.4 as a separate amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would.
Representative Katiza Watun renews her motion to adopt line. Well, let's talk about it. Is there any discussion to the Katiza Watun amendment? Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And don't necessarily oppose it. I just want to know why we're doing this, why we have the $9.5 million buffer, why we're trying to do that. And I'll just be transparent. In looking at this, MMV has money to administer this. They have the people. So I'm wondering why we're letting them off the hook of saying, well, you could be off by 9.5. We're just going to set it aside.
Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Krisha, as I understand it, this is money for this fiscal year that is not going to be used. So it's just a technical procedure that we have to cancel it and then officially reappropriate to future years. And Ms. Adrians, if she could probably clarify if we need any additional
information. Ms. Adrians, please.
Mr. Chair and members, that was actually a good explanation. So in order to capture the money from fiscal year 19 that would otherwise be canceled to the general fund, this is a way to cancel it sort of proactively and then reappropriate it for the same purpose in the upcoming biennium.
Very good.
Any further discussion to the Katiza Watun?
I just want to finish.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Krisha, I thought you were done.
No, no problem. Agreed. Fiscally, we need to do this. I would just alert us, and you know, we'll support this. But we should make sure we're finding a way to get this money into these scholarships. The fact that this is sitting there is telling me that there are kids that did not get served by this. And however we can work together, however we can figure this out to get the Department of Ed to get this money out, it's in a spot where it's not helping. And that so support it. We need to do it. But we also need to push the Department of Ed to get this money out the door.
Very good. Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree, and I think that reappropriating it to future years, we're going to be able to serve additional students. So thank you, everybody, for your support.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative Katiza Watun renews her motion to adopt lines 1.9 to 2.4. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Moving on now to lines 2.5 to 2.11. This is the language regarding the Metro Deaf Charter School. Representative Daniels, would you like to move this section of the bill, or of the amendment, pardon me?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would like to move the third section of the amendment.
Thank you very much. Any discussion, any comment you wish to make, sir?
I do. I think it's a really good amendment. It's always hard when you have cross subsidies to cover all the expenses, and this way the deaf school will have a lot less shortage in their funding, and I support it 100%.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Daniels. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Representative Daniels renews his motion to adopt lines 2.5 to 2.11. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And finally, Representative Katiza Batun, would you like to make a motion to adopt lines 2.2 to 2.12, why don't we just call it 12? 2.12 to 2.13 as a separate amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would.
Very good. Any discussion to the Katiza Batun motion? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Katiza Batun, for bringing this forward. I think we need to do the language. I think there were some real problems with the fact that we hadn't clarified, at least hadn't put in the initial steps towards residency in the program. And I'm going to ask for just a minute of latitude, Mr. Chair, and just say that while this language understood why we have to do it, I think the program itself, and you and I talked briefly about this, I think it should be best done within St. Paul, and I think we're moving state funds. And I just would open up that there's a whole litany of issues that are going to come with us putting money and taking it out of our purview in the state, and those will need to be addressed. So I understand why you're doing this, and I think we need to have more time on exactly what that program can and can't accomplish using state dollars.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Any other discussion to the Katiza Watoon amendment on regarding lines 2.12 and 2.13? Seeing none. All those in favor of the Katiza Watoon motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. We have adopted the whole of the amendment through those four votes. Thank you, members, for your patience in working through that. Next, we have an amendment coded A8. Representative Youakim, I believe that is yours.
A9, I think. Maybe not.
Oh. You know, if Sarah, if Ms. Bird tells me it's A8, it's A8.
I wrote it wrong in my notes.
All right. Representative Youakim.
All right. Thank you, members. This is the language from Representative Christensen's House File 1369. It was heard in the Education Policy Committee on March 20th and sent to the floor as amended. The language you see before you is a compromise language between the schools and the advocates of the bill. I would also have included it in my policy bill, but it didn't get to us in time to do that. However, the bill did make deadlines here and in the other body. The amendment would simply create a statewide goal for all schools to do benchmarking of best practices that will help schools save money on their utility bills. Every dollar saved on energy costs is an extra dollar available for use in the classroom. The state of Minnesota has a software tool called B3, which is available for free to schools and school districts to track their progress, compare peers, and use building energy data to improve performance and save money. Benchmarking can help schools and districts identify and plan for equipment upgrades and behavioral changes that will cost efficient, reduce their utility bills. For example, in my own district in St. Louis Park, benchmarking in the B3 software has helped identify more than $213,000 in potential savings. The amendment includes no penalty on schools or districts if they do not use the program. This is simply a tool that's good for schools, students, and taxpayers.
Thank you, Representative Youakim.
Mr. Chair, I forgot to mention that currently 200 school districts are already doing the benchmarking, and among those districts using the program, the software has identified over $10 million of cost savings.
Thank you. Representative Youakim moves the A8 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And we just heard Representative Youakim note that how many schools have done it without putting this in statute. So I would question why we need to put this in the statute book. We, in fact, have created a new section of law.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any other discussion to the Youakim amendment? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Thank you, Chair Youakim. In spirit, yeah, let them do this. We have 200 schools. I know we even have GOP authors on the bill, and I think it's a good idea. However, I have to speak to the purity of putting language. And what we have here is a comfort language of a last sentence that says, a school district must not be penalized. And this is a problematic way of writing this. We could have accomplished this with a may or not done it at all. I mean, we could have done just say a public school may enter and maintain monthly, because that's essentially what we're doing. The challenge that I see here and in working in the schools and talking to superintendents and school boards is we create a level of uncertainty that they really don't know what we're trying to tell them. We're not telegraphing them truly what our intentions are. Are we telling them you must do this and at some point you will have to, because a school district could simply just say, well, when do we see a repealer to take the line away that says we can't be penalized? And so we are creating a mandate even though it doesn't seem like we're creating a mandate, in their mind they're going to have to decide to do this and or not do it, but school districts are going to have to think in advance and say, what does this mean down the road? So I think we are creating a situation of uncertainty that we don't need to. I think that this would be much better done if those schools that have found the encouragement would come to Department of Education and say, this is why this is great. Let's do a guideline and push it that way. This is heavy-handed. So for that reason alone, I think this is not the right way to get there.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kreisha covered one of my questions. The other thing, I'm looking just at the language. There's no appropriation on this. So is there an appropriation somewhere for these reports, or is this basically an unfunded mandate to the school districts?
Representative Youakim.
Mr. Chair, Representative Juergens, thanks for the question. The software is absolutely free for the districts to use. Over 200 school districts are doing it, and to Representative Kreisha's comments, too, is that I think this is a way of us elevating this and explaining how important it is and how it could save them money. And you're right, it is a carrot without a stick, but sometimes we need to do that to highlight what we really want schools to do.
So just a follow-up. So
Representative Juergens.
They use software to do this, or is it through the utility companies, or how is there no cost associated?
Representative Youakim.
Mr. Chair, it's a free software through the state, and the information can come right off their utility bills, and anybody in the district can input the data. They can put in as much as they want or as little as they want to get results.
Thank you.
Representative Juergens and committee members, there is a letter in your packet that speaks to this amendment. And just a reminder for both members and the public, we are not taking public testimony today. Our public testimony started in January and ended yesterday. So any further discussion? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. I apologize for speaking twice on it. And again, I don't want this to sound like the idea is bad, but I just will give you a comment that I heard from one of my small schools. They said, Ron, if you don't think for a minute we're looking at our utility bills every single day trying to save costs, you know, you're wrong. Know that we talk to you all the time about money, and we're trying to find under every rack or under every rock, under every couch cushion pennies, so we are doing this. So I get the spirit. I don't know that we as a legislature need to tell the school boards, hey, look for more efficiencies, because they're probably already doing it in this area.
Representative Youakim.
This actually, why one of the reasons why we want to put it as law is because some districts might not even know about it. So this really elevates it to show them that this is a free tool that they can use to help make their jobs easier.
Any further discussion to the Youakim A8 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Next, I have Representative Hewitt. I have an A18 amendment. Representative Hewitt, would you like to move the amendment and then tell us about it?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the amendment.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, this particular amendment grants recipients must prioritize their proceeds to expand access to museum, education centers, education center programs, low-income families, and other underserved population. This particular amendment actually reaches out to those that don't have the money to get into these museums, and also it covers homeschools and private schools.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Discussion to the Hewitt motion. Representative Kreisha.
Did you have a comment? Okay. Just very quickly, I'm going to support the Hewitt motion. One thing I will ask, and Representative Hewitt, from our days of early on, the 3 days that we spent together before we were sworn in, the language, and both sides have done this, to the extent practical, I think could be done better. And I know why you did that. I know why we've seen in our bills. And so what I would ask that, and all of us, I think we could find better ways of helping direct people without using ambiguous language. And maybe this is the inner Hemingway in me coming out. But ambiguous language like this creates uncertainty. So.
Suddenly, Representative Kreisha, I'm visualizing you with a large beard, excuse me, maybe a large beard too. Hemingway was known.
You don't know my family's DNA.
Any further discussion to the Hewitt A8 amendment? A18, excuse me. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Moving through the packet, the A-19 amendment, Representative Katiza Watoon to the A-19 amendment, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A-19 amendment is updated text from House File 566, which is chief authored by Representative Wozniak. This amendment makes small language changes that were discussed with stakeholders, primarily to ensure that the threat assessment team in the schools is not dealing with suicidal ideation or self-harm, so that the students dealing with those issues get help right away, urgently, immediately, rather than going through the threat assessment process.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watoon. Discussion to the A-19 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And we had this language in our bill last year, which Governor Dayton vetoed. So we're glad to see it back.
Thank you very much, Representative Erickson. Any further discussion to the Katiza Watoon A-19 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Pryor to the A-29 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amendment came out of discussions about how to respond to the 2017 legislative auditor report, 2016, well, the previous legislative auditor report, talking about the need to coordinate programs. And so what you see is a list of all of the early childhood programs, or what we work to be an important list of early childhood programs that we have. And right now, it's difficult to coordinate these programs and even know who's being served across programs on this list. And that there's just barriers in terms of technology is one. So our databases don't communicate is one of the issues that we have. So this just begins with the first step for solving this problem and responding to that legislative auditor report. And the first step is to have the departments that administer these programs, the Department of Education, Department of Health, Human Services, and the Department of Health, work together to produce a report. And that to do that, they're going to need to involve IT. And so at the end, there is an appropriation, and that is to work with the IT services and have a manager that can work with these different departments to come up with the first step for how we will come up with that solution.
So Representative Pryor moves the A-29 amendment. Discussion to the Pryor amendment. Representative Krishoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if we could take this one in two parts as well. And I think, Representative Pryor, you highlighted where we'd like to segment this between 2.18, which is dealing with the very good program and coordination piece, and we'd like to speak to that, and then taking the 2.19 to 2.23 separately, because I think there's some separate issues we'd like to highlight and talk about.
All right. Representative, we don't need to divide. We can just
we can do what we did before, which is vote on each section.
Sure. And you'd prefer we vote on the first section first.
Please. I'd like to speak to that first.
All right. So Representative Krisha moves that we section lines 1.4 through lines 2.18.
Correct.
Thank you very much. Discussion to the Krisha motion. Representative Krisha.
The first thing I'd just like to say is Representative Pryor, nice work. That is an excellent section. We have too tried to do this, and I think it's very important that we start to try to coordinate between the two. So I applaud your efforts in there. I believe you had separate bills that may have moved through GovOps, but I just want to highlight this. On lines 1.10, we're doing some rulemaking, and on 1.20, we're also doing some rulemaking. So I believe we need to make sure that GovOps has looked at that. And I'll just ask, have they actually seen that language, and are they familiar that that may fall in their jurisdiction, and have they given their stamp of approval?
Representative Pryor.
So it is a report is what we're looking for right now, not rulemaking at this time. Actually initiating a process of rulemaking, but just writing a report is the intent of what we're doing here. So let's see. This is a version 2195 was the original bill that this is taken from, and that was not heard in GovOps. It was heard in judicial and civil law.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. And okay, so this is way in the weeds, but it is rule, or it is a report, but we are still asking state agencies to coordinate, which means they have to agree to this, and they have to have, and they have to do their fiscal and all that. So the reason I highlight this is because if we don't have GovOps telling these agencies to coordinate, some agencies could just say, nope, we're not going to do it, and which means the effectiveness of the report drops way down. So that's, I mean, that's why the GovOps and the rulemaking, all of that process is there. So I would highlight to you, I want to support this, but I would highlight to you, we need to make sure they are told as agencies, you have to coordinate and you have to do this so the report can be effective. And so that's why I'm highlighting that, and I want to make sure that we just don't step that very important part of the process.
Representative Pryor, is this rooted in the federal grant that the Department of Education received last December?
It is, Mr. Chair, thank you. And it's, there is a grant right now that the Department of Administration, Department of Education is working with, and this report also comes out of the work that they're doing with that federal grant. So some of this work has already actually been funded federally through that grant. And then also, just to your point also, and I appreciate that, when we sat down and actually wrote this amendment, it was with the members of MDE, DHS, and Department of Health, too, that were around the table to talk about the importance of getting this done and what it would take to have it happen.
Representative Kreisha, I need to make a correction to your motion, if I may.
Sure.
It's lines 1.3, not 1.4, to 2.18. So with that correction.
Yeah, that's friendly. I'll accept it.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion to the Kreisha motion on lines 1.3 to 2.18 of the A29 prior amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Kreisha, do you wish to move lines 2.19 to 2.23?
Actually, if I could, I would not, so that we don't have the same confusion we had before.
All right. Representative Pryor, would you like to move lines 2.19 to 2.23?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Discussion to the prior motion. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. And Representative Pryor and members, this is why I oppose this. So this section... okay, so we're telling them we need to do this. Mm-hmm. Let's coordinate it. Let's get the reports. Let's find out what we need to do. This section puts the cart before the horse because we're allocating money to what we don't know we don't have yet. We don't know what we don't know. I think at some point there will have to be money allocated, but there's some problems here with this as well, one of which is we're requiring Minute to put a FTE in, which this committee does not have jurisdiction. That's a state gov budget item. The second thing we're doing here, and this I do oppose, and I hope we all oppose, we're taking money out of scholarships to fund this. That money's got to go to the kids. State gov should be able to find $300,000 or the $600,000 total if this was actually going to happen, and they're going to have an FTE because they'll use them for other areas. So I oppose this for two reasons. Number one is probably three reasons. Number one, it should go to state gov. Number two, we're creating an FTE using dollars that I believe should go to the kids. And number three is that this is not in our jurisdiction.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to this point, this was in consultation with these different departments that are to produce this report. And these are all people that are administrating these programs. And none of them are experts on data, on databases. And what they have to say is that we don't have the solutions because we are not the experts in where the problem is, which is having databases talk to each other. So they said, you know, we people that work on these programs, that understand these programs, that are devoted and passionately care about these programs and the people that we serve with these programs, we're saying we can't even begin to solve this problem right now because we don't have the expertise. And that's what they had to say to us. And so it's been very, very difficult to even set aside this little bit of money mm-hmm. to try to solve the problem. But if we are actually going to serve all, and we can go back to that list tonight, all of these programs are groups that came before us in the Early Childhood Committee and talked about what they were trying to do and how they were trying to serve the people at risk. And right now, some of the things that we don't know who we're missing. We don't know who is cheating the system sometimes. We don't know who's taking money from kids that deserve it and, you know, putting it in their own pocket. And partly it's because we don't have the database and we don't have the communication and the coordination to solve these problems. And so what we wanted to do as we were working on our Early Childhood Committee, and I think that we finally are a solution for beginning to solve the problem now in this committee, and that's why I'm asking for your support right now. For all the reasons that you just gave me for why you can't support it, I'm asking for your support to actually solve these problems instead of just saying, well, you know, they should be able to fix it on their own. And that's what the legislative audit report said, is that they're not able to fix it on their own. They need an intervention. They need us to step forward and say, we're going to take responsibility, we're going to start solving it now, and we're going to put in motion the steps that we need to do something that really works. So I would ask for support.
Thank you. Any further discussion to the prior motion on 2.19 to 2.23? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Pryor, has Minute said they are capable of developing a program that can track this much data? Because I have reservations about some of the projects that have gone forth before that have failed, and I think we need to know first, are they capable of this before we send them these dollars?
Representative Pryor.
They are capable of if they're not capable, they are capable of subcontracting it to someone that does have the expertise.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this is problematic still. I just don't have confidence that they would even find a subcontractor who could do this without assurances ahead of time before we give them this money.
Any further discussion? Representative Katiza-Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pryor, just I'm hopeful to clarify, without minimizing the amount of money that's requested here, it is a smaller amount of money, and it is, if it's coming out of the scholarship budget, I understand that there might be some kids in the meantime that we're not able to serve, but I think I'm hearing you say that the hope of this process and this position is to make all of these programs more efficient and more effective so that we're able to serve additional children and families in the long run. Is that correct?
Representative Pryor.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Katiza-Watoon, that is correct. And as we both know, we are responsible for taxpayer dollars and to make sure that it's going for the intent that taxpayers would like to see it go to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would expect that everybody support this so that we can make these programs more efficient and effective.
Thank you. Representative Krishan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Pryor, Representative Katiza-Watoon, and all the members, I absolutely agree with where we're going with this, what we're trying to do. I've been on this fight. I've tried to get DHS to coordinate. In fact, at one point, now current Mayor Melvin Carter was in the position to take care of this under the Dayton administration. He had an early childhood charter in this. However, here and I'm opposing this adamantly, actually, because we are doing exactly what you just said. We're taking money, which I think is an easy out of scholarships. We're taking money out of kids' hands for this problem. And I'm sorry, this is the one where I'm going to bristle a bit, because these agencies can come together and fix this. And they need us collaboratively to put a heavy hand on them. Minute can figure this out. DHS can find money. There's CCAP money. There's administrative money that they are using for other things. They can do this. And for us, and I know why you're trying to fix it, but if we don't take a stand and say, you figure this out and coordinate across departments, there are programs like MinLink, there are other ones that we have heard, it is possible. And I believe we're running into bureaucrats who are telling us no because it's easy to say no. We are talking about kids, we are talking about data, and we are talking about a $4,000 or $7,500 scholarship that means more, and we heard it in the state address last night, that means more in a kid at 4 years old than sitting over here not being used because bureaucrats won't come together. And this is not a partisan issue. This is not something you've created. You're trying to solve it. This is something bigger than us that other people aren't seeing how important we think kids' education is. And to that point, the reason I would support or not support this and actually ask for a roll call is because let's do the first part. Let's get your report. Then I will come to you once we have that report, and I will beat on every door of every bureaucrat that we have to find this money, but not to take it from kids. And that's just where I am. That, and I apologize for my passion, but I believe there's a four-year-old out there who will miss an opportunity in life because a bureaucrat wouldn't help us fix this problem. And that drives me crazy. And I know your heart is there, too, and I know why you're trying to do this, and we're arguing on, I'm debating on bad government and letting bureaucrats off the hook when kids could be doing much better. So that's where I'm at, and that's just where my passion is.
Thank you, Representative Kreshaw. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Representative Chair Dabney. And I just want to thank Representative Pryor for bringing this forward because, you know, Representative Kreshaw, you're right. There's some things that need to be fixed in delivery of these dollars, but a lot of the reasons why Pathway $1 are left sitting is because the process to get to them for the parents is too complicated. That's why Pathway $2 are used up faster, because it's a way to braid together the safety net for kids. And I know that in other scholarship programs and other grants we have, there is always a little bit of a set-aside for admin cost. I'm not quite sure if this one has that already. But something like what Representative Pryor is bringing forward is to help that along. So I would suggest a yes vote.
Any further discussion to the prior motion on lines 2.19 to 2.23? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Chair Dabney.
Aye.
Minority Lead Kreshaw.
No.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Yes.
Representative Bennett is excused. Representative Daniels.
No.
Representative DeMith.
No.
Representative Detmer.
No.
Representative Edelson.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Hewitt.
Yes.
Representative Juergens is gone.
No.
Oh, sorry. Representative Katiza Watun.
Yes.
Representative Kinesh Padin.
Yes.
Representative Mark Corp.
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Representative Nornes.
No.
Representative Pryor.
Yes.
Representative Richardson.
Yes.
Representative Sandel.
Yes.
Representative Joachim.
Yes.
Give me just a minute to total.
With a vote of 12 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails. Moving on, where are we? Representative Edelson, would you like to move the A31 amendment to be before the committee?
Thank you, Chair, I would.
Thank you. Would you like to speak to the amendment?
Yes, please. Chair members, the A31 is addressing the innovative mental health grants that were funded in the last biennium at $4.9 million. It seeks to do, for this next biennium, $5.4 million. The amendment also directs the DHS to award grants to the organizations that are already delivering services under this model, and then to open up the rest of the grants to level 4 programs. It also addresses the fact that if there's a balance, that these districts can use it to provide services in their communities. And this is coming out of the ed budget. I'm carrying also the mental health grants, the school linked, because the way that the model's delivered is in the classroom. It's completely separate than what the school linked model looks like. So I think it makes sense to have it under the ed budget again, and I hope to have member support.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Any discussion to the A31 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Sandel, I believe you have the A13 amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair and members.
Would you so move that?
Pardon me?
Would you move the amendment?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This amendment enhances and strengthens our PSEO and concurrent enrollment programs. It adds to the current legislation and law offering opportunities for students to enroll in online courses, which are becoming prevalent in our Minnesota's post-secondary institutions. I'm an advocate of PSEO and concurrent enrollment programs, and I would encourage the committee to accept this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Any discussion to the A13 amendment? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sandell. This is an excellent policy change. We need to allow students to have more than one online course when they're in PSEO. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A13 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Sandstead. Do you have an A26 amendment for us?
I do.
Thank you very much. Representative Sandstead moves the A26 amendment.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the A26 amendment is brought forth by the advocacy work of Mr. Heller. What this amendment does is it directs the Commissioner of Education to define the terms gifted student, talented student, twice exceptional student, print disabled student, and reading disabled student, and then it requires the commissioner to report those terms or the definition of those terms to the early childhood through through 12 education committees by February 15th of 2020.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Sandstead A26 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. That concludes our amendments. Well done, committee. Discussion to the chair's motion on the H2400DE1. Oh, thank you. Mr. Beltran, the forecast amendment. Mr. Strom, can somebody help me identify the
1916118? Mr. Chair, that's correct. The 19-1618 amendment is the forecast adjustments. This is annually added to the bill and conforms the aid programs to the amounts carried in the forecast. There's no charge against your target for making these changes. Essentially, they adjust for change in pupil counts and other things to bring the formulas into full funding. So some of the changes are up and others are down. But the goal with these changes is to balance to the forecast levels of spending for fiscal year 19.
And, Mr. Strom, no legislators' fingers touched this amendment. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
All right. With that, the chair moves the 19.1618 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. With that, we got everything? Discussion to the H2400DE1 is amended. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some questions I'd like to ask. Article 2 under Education Excellence and the non-exclusionary policies and practices, I'm wondering if a teacher still has the right to remove a disruptive student from the classroom, because last year we ensured that was in the non-exclusionary part of the proposal that went forth that the governor vetoed, and I'm not feeling comfortable that is still a right of the teacher.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would not change language related to removing children from the classroom specifically. It would relate to dismissal in terms of expulsion, suspensions.
Representative Erickson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I think last year we ensured that we included language. So I would recommend as this goes forward that we still have that additional language so that teachers still know they have the right to remove a child when they are disruptive or violent. I have another question for Representative Joachim. You know, in your proposal for the freedom of press, what is it that students cannot do now under present law?
Representative Uakim.
And court decisions.
Oh, apologies, Representative Erickson. Representative Uakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, with the Hazelwood ruling overthrowing Tinker, it's all subjective by the administration. That's why I want to pass this bill so it's more specific and it'll give both students and districts something more concrete to point to.
Representative Erickson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Uakim, I lived through that court decision had to, you know, discuss with my journalism students that sometimes it is wiser to listen to the teacher, the journalism teacher, as I was for all the years of my career in addition to English. And I think we have to instill in our students that there are some times when they don't have that freedom to write in the newspaper or write a caption in the yearbook or include a photo that could in some way jeopardize the privacy of a student or reveal something about a teacher. I'm very uncomfortable with that provision, which you already know, Representative Uakim. And having, you know, been a journalism teacher when actually journalism was truly journalism, I taught the five W's and the one H and made my students adhere to reporting fact. I think we need to really consider what could be the result of adding this to a state statute to say that now maybe the door's wide open. So those are my comments, Mr. Chair and Representative Uakim.
Representative Uakim.
Thank you, Representative Mr. Chair and Chair Representative Erickson. I agree with you that we have to make sure that students have good journalistic standards practice. I'm still looking at some language to tighten that up. But if you look at this section on page 56, 57, what's unprotected expression, 57.11 through 57.21. If it's defamatory, profane, harassing, threatening, or intimidating, constitutes an unwarranted invasion of privacy, violates federal or state law, causes a material and substantial disruption of a school activity, or is directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action on school premises or violation of lawful school policies or rules that are put in place, including the policies attached to our bullying laws, it is not protected speech. So there is a lot of things that students will be directed to saying, no, that's not okay. And it's my goal with this is that students need to learn how to make decisions and make good decisions and learn how to express themselves in a safe environment like our school setting, under the direction of a journalism teacher like Representative Erickson was, so that they understand, because when they turn 18 and leave our schools, a switch doesn't all of a sudden turn on so that they know what to do. So this is really giving some direction both to the schools and to the students to say, look, this is what journalistic standards are. These are the things that you're not going to be able to print in our schools. It basically only says, and what had happened with Hazelwood is, right now, districts could say, you know what, we just don't like what you're saying, so you can't print it. This gives more concrete bookends around it that have matched up in case law and everything else. So that's why it's in here.
Thank you, Representative Uakim. Other discussion to the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry, Representative Erickson.
I'd like to move to the tiered licensure section and ask this question of Representative Kunesh Padin. So your language suggests that it is okay for a Tier 4 teacher to take or to have the teacher evaluation verify that they are competent in reading, writing, and math, but we don't trust the evaluation of the principal, the school leader, to indicate that their teacher evaluation gives them the right to have a Tier 4 license. I don't understand your thinking there. So why are you putting the trust in passing the reading, writing, and math test in Tier 4, saying a teacher evaluation can verify that, but not trust to verify that their performance in the classroom is indicative of their earning a Tier 4?
Representative Kunesh-Padin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Erickson, or Representative Erickson. Competency looks different in very many ways. Somebody can take a test and ace it and not be the greatest in the classroom, and vice versa. And so this provides an opportunity for teachers to give examples and concrete evidence of their ability to teach, but it also provides ways to prove it academically and show that they have that competency.
Representative Erickson?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Kunesh-Badin, you are lowering the standard. And across the nation, even Minnesota, after we passed the proposal for the tiered licensure, has been criticized for ignoring how important it is for parents to know that teachers have passed the reading, writing, and math tests to earn that highest level of licensure in our state. So I will continue to disagree, of course, with the entire section. But, Mr. Chair, one last question.
Certainly.
And this deals with the section on the health, the sexual health education program. And I need to have a definition of what interpersonal consent is, as it is listed in Article 5.
Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we had this discussion in our policy provision. That goes to what we've talked about all along and what's already in our health curriculum with children, and that is kind of, if we want to think about what we do with the younger children about good touch, bad touch. This is just about bodily autonomy and that you get to tell people whether or not they can invade your space.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other comments?
Well, I have another question, Mr.
Certainly,
Chair.
Representative Erickson.
President Joachim, how are we distinguishing physical consent from sexual activity?
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to grab the section so I know exactly where it is. I know you said Article 5.
Representative Erickson, do you have the citation in front of you?
Found it, I think.
67. For members of the public, page 167.
Thank you. So are you talking about 167.23, or which exact one are you talking about?
Representative Erickson?
Well, I have concerns on line 167.28. Consent is used in this section to mean affirmative, conscious, and voluntary agreement to engage in interpersonal, physical, or sexual activity. So how did you distinguish between physical and sexual?
Representative Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I think the language is pretty clear. Physical could be a handhold. Sexual activity probably includes anything from kissing to penetration. But the whole basis of this rule is that it's supposed to be medically accurate, like our health curriculum is now, and that the Department of Education, Department of Health will look for putting modeled curriculum indicators on their website so districts can make that choice about what curriculum they want to use. We're just kind of laying out some groundwork of things they have to touch on. Districts are already teaching sexual health. They're already teaching bodily health. They're already teaching consent all the way down to our kindergartners with good touch, bad touch. This just gives them a little bit more concrete examples of what they should be looking for in a good curriculum so that everybody is understanding what's going on and that it's inclusive.
Representative Erickson.
Well, Mr. Chair, my final comment, I will continue to oppose this. This should be approached more from a biological perspective and taught in health class. As our children grow and mature, there are times in their lives, and the teacher can recognize that when they can learn about some of these concepts that we want them to understand as they go into the world and become citizens, responsible citizens. So this entire section that has been added and was added in policy, to which I was opposed then, is just harming our children in the way this is constructed rather than providing for them a respect and a knowledge of their bodies and how they grow and mature. And I would hope that school districts are really concerned about this if it goes forward and becomes law, because this is taking away the ability of an excellent biology teacher or teacher of health, or in the elementary, an elementary teacher, to teach these sequentially as children mature and grow. So the way it is written, it is problematic from the get-go because it assumes this for all of our children K-12. I am so opposed to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we already do teach biological health K-12. And I hear your concerns. This does not take any district's ability away to choose their curriculum, for parents to opt out, for districts to notify. That's all in the underlying language and will still remain there. This is supposed to be medically accurate. And if you look on section, and now I got to find it again, 1.68, no, that's your, that's the amendment we accepted from you in policy. Ah, 1.68 to 168.26 to 168.30. This does not take any ability away for a district to use a biology teacher. This just says if your biology teacher isn't comfortable teaching this, they can get an outside expert to come in and help. So it does not take away any ability for a teacher in the classroom to teach this.
Thank you, Representative
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Erickson. I do have a final comment.
Certainly.
That's most interesting that you refer to this language, Representative Youakim, because the policy bill is trying to undo Tier 1 as part of our licensure, and here we're allowing someone who has no teaching license to come into the classroom. So that's my statement.
Representative Youakim.
Just a correction. Our policy bill is not trying to undo Tier 1 licensure. We still have Tier licensure. There's still Tier 1 licensees in the classroom, and there's will maintain to be Tier 1 licensees in the classroom.
Thank you. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to thank Cheryl Youakim, actually, Representative Youakim, for this. In terms of looking at this last year, what we know is that people need to be taught about consent. I have 9-year-old sons, and I'm teaching them what it means to when somebody says don't touch them. I think that boys and girls and any student that's growing up, if we are failing them if we don't teach them what consent is. And we know over this last year that students don't know. And so our programming currently needs to be modified. So thank you for bringing this bill.
Thank you. Other comments to the bill as amended? Representative Krisha.
And I can wait. I just have 5 questions, so if there's anybody else, I can take my 5 before comments.
Anyone else? Representative Krisha.
Thank you. Okay, so just a couple simple ones and clarification. Under Article 1, the 2-year exemption on the post-Labor Day, more of a comment. I've been back and forth. We've all been back and forth on this. The challenge that I see with this is it is a negative consequence, and we fail to recognize some of the geographic diversity of our state. There are great things that happen within the classroom, but there are great things that don't happen in the classroom. And I've wrestled with this, and I understand why, you know, we've had this conversation, but I still believe this falls best on the school board shoulders, and people can run for the school board and talk about this issue about when the school should start. There is a process that they can apply to MDE, and I think we're usurping that. So I just oppose that section from the simple fact that I know why we're here. We've had this conversation back and forth, but I do think we are maybe a little, when we put this into law and open the door to full repeal of this, I think we are heavy-handedly falling on the wrong side and not letting the locals decide.
Mr. Chair.
Reverend Krisha, you said you had 5 questions. Do you want to do them one at a time? What's your preference?
That's just fine.
If
we want to have back and forth on each, I'm fine.
Sure. Representative Youakim.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify that this only gives exemptions for the 2 years if the school board so chooses. So it's still specific local control. And one of the reasons why this is such an important provision to have in here is that Labor Day starts the next 2 years on September 7th and September 6th. If we had another winter like we do now, we are not going to get the 165 days in. And I don't want to have to be back again doing another school days bill or snow days bill. This just gives the opportunity for the local school board to so choose if they want to start on August 30th and August 31st, those 2 years only, to do that. But it's still a local decision.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you. I appreciate the comments. We'll have a philosophical disagreement on this because I believe that process already exists. Winners have existed long before we have. And, you know, I think when we signal legislation, we're signaling a direction. And I think in 2 years it will be very easy for them to come back and say, well, let's make this 5. Let's make this 10. So that's why I'm arguing against it. Second question?
Continue, sir.
Second question, and this one I have to wrap my brain around. Article 6, we do the current radon testing results are exempted from public data. Why? Maybe we can fix this with an amendment, but if people are sending their kids to school as they do, shouldn't they know what the results of those tests are so they understand the safety of that building? And so if this is exempt from private data or public data, the parents wouldn't know. So I just want to clarify, maybe I'm reading that wrong, but I want to make sure we get that right, because I actually think this is one that we may have agreement on. We want people to know the building safety that they're sending their students to. And I'm sorry, I don't have the line right in front of me, but it's Article 6.
Who's got the line?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fisher, are you talking about Section 1 or Section 2, radon or lead?
And Representative Joachim, can you help us radon. With the what page you're on?
194.
194.
Line 194.11.
194.1?
194.10 is the Article 6, Section 1.
Okay.
Okay. On page 194.
And what specific data are you talking about?
Radon testing, Section 4. And where did I see the exemption?
It's 196.
196.
We've moved to 195, 196.
Sorry. And I'm trying to find the exact language you're talking about.
And so let me do this.
Representative Krisha.
If there is the ability to allow this to become public data, then fine. If we could just clarify that, and if we, you know, if that's a floor amendment, that might be a good place for some compromise. But I just want to make sure I read that, and I'm sorry, I don't have it right in front of me, but I just want to make sure that issue is raised and we have it clarified.
Thank you. I will check back on that and get back to you. I'll check with
thank you.
Representative Wazlowick, I believe. I'm trying to remember if that was her bill or if it was the governor's bill.
Thank you.
Oh, Claflin, sorry.
Representative Claflin. All right. Representative Krisha.
And then my last three involve Article 8 of Early Childhood.
You want to so Article 8 begins on page 214.
Yep. And so I'm going off of a little bit of memory, and oh, here we go. Thank you. So the first thing, and this came through in the division report that came from the Early Childhood Committee, but we give them the grandfathered of a teacher to. Let me back up. Let me do this right. We're encouraging teachers. In fact, we're mandating teachers have licensure in that. I've heard that debate. I think it's a worthwhile argument that teachers should be certified in these areas and we should move expertise forward.
So, Ms. Krisha, if I may.
Yep, you may.
Page 214, thank lines 18 through 21.
Yes, thank
you. Just to help people follow along.
Yep, and I'm actually specifically addressing 2.14 exemption from licensure section.
Yes.
What we do on 214 is we say they need to have a teaching license in accordance with Chapter 122A. However, if you are currently employed, we exempt you until 2024. So I understand the exemption. I understand why we would give them time. What I don't understand, and this is what I want to raise, is why we're moving them into the definition of teacher right away is that just to give them collective bargaining rights. And the reason I raise it this way, and it's not necessarily a whether they should be in the union or have collective bargaining rights or not, it's I think what we're doing is we're giving them an out without a incentive. We're saying, yeah, go ahead and hold off on your licensure or don't make that a priority, but we're going to give you the collective bargaining. I think that should be flipped and say, hey, get your licensure so that you can get your expertise, and then you'll also get all the benefits that come with collective bargaining. So I think we're actually holding off for up to three years of people moving along faster than we would like them.
Well, Representative Krisha, I can respond some extent at least. These folks are teachers. They're teaching.
they should be allowed to be part of the bargaining unit and receive the protections that that provides and assurances. And, of course, in a post-Janus world, just because they're in the job class doesn't compel them at all to join the union. That's their choice. But this provides, this recognizes their role and status in the school equal to their peers teaching in other programs and grades.
Yeah.
Representative Crescia.
I don't disagree with anything. All I'm saying is I think this language, if you're a new teacher, we're saying you have to have a licensure. In order to get hired, you have to have a licensure. So we're putting a stake in the ground saying this is an important licensure. My only difference is we're saying to those that are already there, we're going to give you some time. And maybe this is the best approach. I'm just saying I'd like them to get to that licensure as well, because if we're requiring it for new folks, we're putting a standard that says this licensure means something. This is a licensure that ensures that you have been through the training and all of that. So you and I agree probably on the collective bargaining benefits. I'm just saying I think we're letting them off the hook a little bit. So that's where I would disagree.
Was that the last of your five, or is there
just two more?
Certainly.
If four-year-olds are essentially excluded now from the scholarship from the PATH 1, what program do we have for them? Are they now, is it CCAP? And has this been thought through? Because we have created a donut hole. In Pathway 1, we've eliminated the four-year-olds, but Pathway 2, the four-year-olds are there. So we have created a fundamental gap in students that could have access to this. And I don't know who best, and I wasn't in those conversations, but to me, that seems to be a structural problem.
Okay. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Crescia. Let me just begin by the, as you said, you know, part of those discussions was our committee started out. We talked about the kind of the research, the scientific research about early childhood. And what became clear in our very first meetings is the importance of the earliest years of learning and brain development. And so because, as we know, as high as we prioritize early childhood, as high as we prioritize K through 12, we still have to make strategic choices. And so we made the strategic choice of, you know, definitely not cutting off anyone from a scholarship that has one right now, but that a shift in priority, that the earliest years, the 0 through 3, are where the brain development is. And 80% of your brain, and I can be corrected if that's the wrong statistic, is by age 3. And so because we have to make these difficult choices, that's where our priority is.
Thank you. And thank you, Representative Pryor. I don't disagree with the research and the peer review on 0 to 3 is abundantly clear. The challenge is we've created a cliff. In Pathway 1, we say the cliff is at 3. In Pathway 2, where we have programs like Head Start and other ones, we allow for four-year-olds. We have created a cliff there. My philosophical disagreement on this is the children that I believe can really benefit from the early learning scholarships are the ones where, and Art Rolnick just wrote a great article in Min Post again, affordability, quality, and choice. Giving the money directly to the family so that they can choose where and be part of that. And we heard it again last night in Governor Walz's State of the State, that when one child or when one adult takes interest and gives security to a kid, the chances of success go way up. My argument, and I've read this through the research and like I said, the Min Post, is when parents are involved in that process, we have great levels of success. I believe, and I understand the priority conversation, but I believe we've created a donut hole of four-year-olds that move through the Pathway 1 where parents have that ability to make the choices and work with their kids. We have eliminated some kids. And maybe that's what we have to do with some choices. I don't agree with it because we found a way to do it for Pathway 2. So I raise objections to that. I think that maybe we could have found it, or maybe there could have been a better way to do that.
Representative Crescia, anything else?
Last one, and this okay. May just be a simple one, and I do have a line number on this one, by the way. 2.16 to 2.162, I'm sorry, 2.1614 to 2.1622. We have new language that allows to charge fees for the mixed delivery system. And are there schools that are currently charging fees? I'm just wondering, are we just allowing that? Or are there schools currently doing this and we're allowing them to be authorized now by MDE?
Representative Kreisha, my reading of the language is that it does not apply to schools. It applies on 216.17, child care center, family child care program, going down to 2.18, community-based organization. So I don't see this language as applying to K-12 schools.
Okay, so my question is just, are there schools that are doing this, and is that where we're headed? I don't believe so. It's just, I'm just asking, just so I understand where we might be heading or what the thought process was to put this language in. And maybe there's no answer. Maybe it's just something we should all contemplate.
Let's let that one float out there.
That's fine.
Thank you.
I'm done now. Just wait for closing comments.
All right. Any other comments to the HF 2400DE amendment as amended? Representative Kreisha, any closing comments? Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do appreciate all the good discussions we've had in here. You know where I stand. I stand with our children. And, you know, for me, as a lifelong teacher, I first look to my school leaders. And I have such great respect through my career and still today for great school leaders. So I'm so happy that we're funding the Principals Academy. I've had principals who've gone through that training. But first you have that great school leader, and that includes a superintendent. But principals for me were always so very important. Then it comes to the teacher in the classroom and having high expectations of students. You know, we're in this proposal, we're dividing up students, we're dividing up teachers, we're not coming together. I mean, I guess I'm thinking in terms of you know, being united in what our efforts are. And we have heard testifiers say, and I heard this in the middle school, middle level college, testimony the other night, and I complimented that principal, because when you know that your teachers have high expectations of their students, they are going to be successful at whatever level, whatever race, whatever ethnicity, or whatever affects them. If a teacher has high expectations, the children will rise to that. Then we need to look at data, and I know there was some discussion when Representative Kunesh-Badin presented about data not being important, but data is very important. And I have visited enough small group meetings in schools across the country to see teachers at work studying the data from whatever it might be, whether it's the state assessment or it's other assessments that are used or other exercises that are used to show that students are improving and learning and getting to the level that they can achieve. And then our work on special education, you know, we're not lowering the cost curve. We're doing probably good things to take care of the cross subsidy. But in special education or in any situation, you have to have immediate intervention. And sometimes that has to do with discipline, but a lot of times it has to do with learning and how a child understands what the teacher is presenting. So, you know, I'm just so committed to, I studied under Madeline Hunter from UCLA, and I'm so committed to those basic standards that you use in the classroom to ensure that students learn. And I'm not sure we're accomplishing that in this proposal that we're presenting this year. And then finally, families are so important. And I'm so pleased that I could work with Representative Mariani when he was chair of policy, in that he brought forth the first definition of cultural competency. And that focused on just three things. You know, teachers have to understand the socioeconomic level of their children, whether they have a native language other than English, and if there's something about their race or ethnicity that is lacking. And so I added then a couple years later, when I took over as chair, that relationship between educators and parents. And we've gone far afield in this proposal in injecting in so many parts of the education and code now of cultural sensitivity, et cetera. But the definition that Representative Mariani created back in 2013 serves us so well. And then the addition of what we added in 2015 to indicate that, you know, cultural competency is that relationship between the educator and the parent, and they focus on those three areas. And I think if we limited it to that and not got so carried away, that our teachers are probably going to follow the law. Because I will tell you, when I was a teacher all those years, and edicts came down from the legislature or the State Department, we sat around and said, that too shall pass. Let's just keep doing the good teaching we're doing. So we know we put all this in statute and how much of it is followed. So I think we should put in statute that which is essential to good teaching, to great learning, and the success of our children. And so with that, I'm going to be voting no on this proposal and hope that along the way some changes are made so that we really hold above our children. Our children are just the most important thing we should focus on here, and I don't think we've done that. Thank you.
Representative Erickson. Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for all your hard work in putting this together. I've watched you create, along with Chair Joachim, an incredible packet of what I feel is a strong educational movement for all of our students as well as administration and the rest. But I'm not exactly sure what Representative Erickson meant when she referenced that I didn't believe in data. I think data is an important tool in education. As a teacher of over close to 24 years now, I realize just how important it is that we do collect the data, that we are using it in the right way to assess what it is that our students need, where their strengths are, what we need to work towards in ensuring that they have all those resources that they need to succeed. And I also recognize that sometimes we are overzealous in our collection of data, and it detracts from the classroom environment, a good learning environment for our students. And so I would just like to affirm that data is what we run off of, but when we use it above and beyond what we need it for and how we extend it to our classrooms, I think sometimes we are doing a disservice to our students. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I'm proud of the work that we did in the Education Policy Committee and thank Chair Dabney for wrapping our bill in. We had bills regarding special ed paperwork, how teachers are licensed, tweaks to the board that does the licensing, and ways to increase teachers of color in our classroom. We heard bills that would require increased training for our teachers and school staff around mental health, suicide prevention, dyslexia, and much more. We heard bills regarding comprehensive sex ed, student press freedom, as well as requiring added credits to civics, educational, and financial literacy that didn't quite make it. But we also heard about changes to current policy, mostly non-controversial, on how we could best deliver education to our students. There were robust discussions that we had. We didn't always agree, but it remained respectful, and I truly do appreciate that. I think we put a good product together here with finance. We put our money where our mandates are. We are making a down payment and systemic change in our schools so that our children's zip code will not determine their fate in life. Not everyone is going to love everything in this bill, but I'm sure everyone can find something to love. Thank you for the consideration, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Members, we have a bit of a choice here. We can steam through, and I hope, I think we're at a point where we could probably finish up briefly. Or if we want to not do it briefly, we could come back after session. So I'll follow the will of the body.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kreisha.
I would just say I have very quick comments, and I think we're fine if everyone's staying. I would just as soon keep the momentum, and I think you can get us to the finish line.
I hope so. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just make a quick comment that it was such an honor to serve on the Early Childhood Committee, and that there were good people there that really cared about and demonstrated their caring for our earliest learners. And I would also like to say that it's been such an honor to be on this Finance Committee, because both of these committees are talking about funding what we care about. And I think this bill does. And I appreciate the ability and the opportunity to serve with you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Representative Kunesh, or no, excuse me, Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will echo what Representative Pryor said. It was an honor to serve on the early childhood division this year and have our bill wrapped into this education finance bill, which we know is a historic investment in all of our Minnesota children. So thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate everyone's hard work.
Thank you very much. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. And I know you're probably going to make lots of accolades. I'm sure you should. And I just want to echo from our side, all the staff, thank you. The hard work, we know who works tireless hours to make sure that we come to prepare, come prepared. So I want to thank staff on both sides and nonpartisan from our side. And also just a quick tip of the hat to former Education Chair, Representative Marquardt. You know the hard work that goes through this. And, of course, I think, Representative Dabney, you've carried the water very well as well. This bill has lots of areas of agreement and has some common ground. We really appreciate the focus on increasing the basic aid, expanding, and I'll tip a hat to Representative Loon's work on mental health grants, safe schools revenue, and the fiscal proposals that Republicans have championed as well as DFL on both sides. So that is just great work, like vocational enrichment grants. These points of agreement demonstrate that collaborative great ideas enjoy success in the committee process and should survive debate and bill creating. And I'll put a note here. We all know, I believe, the cross-subsidy special education is a huge crisis. And we talk about it, and I think that both sides have made commitments, and I hope we can use that as a place where we join arms and keep fighting to help our schools in that. Included in this bill is millions of dollars for private schools, which continues to support the parents' rights to convert culturally affirming education. This session, we've highlighted the Native American schools, and in this committee, we've heard testimony from Native American schools, students, and teachers, and the importance of spirituality in their culture and education. I applaud that. I think that approach is right on, and I believe it can be a foundation for continued conversations regarding the importance of parental choice, opportunity, and the success that culturally affirming education can bring. While areas of common ground exist, there is a canyon of differences that exist as well in this bill. And frankly, the spirit of dissent and debate gets us to better policy, and I appreciate the fact that we're allowed to bring our opposing ideas and try to make these better. There is, as previously stated, the $900 million target is aspirational. I believe that simply cannot be achieved without a $400 million shift of transportation dollars. May not be a problem that was created by this committee, but it is reality. This presents a structural problem, and despite the lofty aspirational number, no funding for school-linked mental health grants is present. No funding for transportation deficits facing so many of our schools in greater Minnesota is present. And there is not a greater commitment to expanding early learning scholarships to more children ages birth to four. I don't believe there's a single person on this committee who doesn't believe in the potential of our students. And as Governor Walz stated in the State of the Address, hope springs eternal optimism, but hope is not a plan. As legislatures, and it's not always fun, it is not our job to bring a bill and hope it becomes law. It must be vetted and reliant on a plan toward success. This bill requires a $418 million shift from the transportation budget, and that is reliant on a gas tax increase. I know we need to pass joint targets by May 6th. The leadership of both bodies will have that problem. That's not one of ours. But we need to get there. And the final number will rest somewhere between the governor's number and the Senate number, however we interpret those numbers. The commitment that we have as a responsibility is to put an education plan together that can become law and can get across the finish line. However difficult that may be, we must temper hope with realistic solutions. And for that reason, I cannot support this bill coming out of committee.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Members, the bill before you, as amended, stabilizes school funding and programs for students. When little Timmy, Representative Marquardt? Johnny, my apologies. When little Johnny leaves school this spring, little Johnny can be a lot more confident that the teachers and school staff that he has relationships with and learns from will be there again this fall under this bill. It recognizes cost drivers for districts, the special ed underfunding that's gone on for years. We respond to that, and we respond to that not only with additional funding, but with changes to the formula to best target that to the districts experiencing the greatest costs. It targets barriers to student development and achievement through supporting mental health services, developing trauma-informed school communities, increasing the availability of school support personnel, and supports schools with school safety and security concerns. And it builds varied bridges to post-secondary opportunities through dual enrollment, PSEO, and increased career and technical education support. It's a package that puts the student at the center and surrounds them with the services, supports, opportunities, and challenges that they need to succeed. Representative Kreisha, you've described the bill as aspirational, as if that's a bad thing. And I don't think it is. I think our students are aspirational. I think that our teachers are aspirational. I think the parents are aspirational for their children and for the future of Minnesota. And if today we can help support those aspirations, those dreams to reality, good on us. With that, I renew my motion that the DE-2400 as amended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. With that, I would also ask that staff make any technical changes necessary and fix any bills, any errors in the bill as is it is engrossed. I want to thank members. Particularly, let me give thanks to the minority side for your engagement this year. Representative Kreisha is right. As we work together collaboratively, we get better policy. To my own members on the House side, this has been a wonderful experience being able to chair this committee and work with all of you. I want to thank our committee pages, Laura Schroeder and Matthew Courtney. Thank you for the services that you've provided and supported this committee with. House Research, Mr. Strom, Ms. Adrians, and Ms. Pera. I don't know how the state would function without the three of you. And I know I would not, so thank you. Mr. Rudquist, Mr. Withers, thank you. Mr. Withers has helped this committee at times when he's looked at us and said, what are you doing? And we said, oh, okay, and we've taken good guidance. Mr. Rudquist, you've supported us closely along the way, and I'm grateful. And to Ms. Sunderland and Ms. Burt, on either side and it of me, and it is that experience having support on either side. So thank you all for the support that you have given to the community. We've worked on a transparent, open, and engaging process. I hope you have found it such. This is the last scheduled meeting of this committee for this session, although I do retain the right to call further committee meetings as session progresses and need arises. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we are adjourned. Thank you.